Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 62 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, and I'm here, as always, with my good friend, Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah, how are you? 62?
62, we're getting old.
I know, gosh.
This is going to be fun. I can't believe we're going to start talking about school. And I know you can't believe it even less.
I am not ready.
Yeah, you're not ready. You're basically kicking and screaming your way into this episode topic. But I'm dragging you with me. No, I'm just kidding.
It's all right. I do it for the people. For all the people whose kids start school like really soon.
Yes. Like next week. I know my Arizona friends start next week. So we're recording this on August 1st. It'll air the first week of August. And whenever you start school out there, we are doing things we shouldn't have freaked out about, the starting school edition. So if you are a longtime listener and have been with us from the beginning, you may recall that this is kind of an ongoing, you know, loosely themed series where we take a topic that in retrospect we shouldn't have been so worried about. So we have a things we shouldn't have freaked out about new mom edition. We have one about parenting toddlers, and I think we can just acknowledge that whether you're a worrier type or not, it's so easy in hindsight to look back and be like, yeah, that was not as big a deal as I made it out to be. And I don't think we can solve all your worries, moms out there with kids who are starting school. But I think sometimes it does help. It even helps me for my own self to look back and think, yeah, that was not such a big deal. So we're so happy you're listening, listeners. And really, this is going to be fun. We're going to kind of gear it toward kids starting preschool or elementary school for the first time. But a lot of this applies if you've moved and your kids are starting a new school, or if your kids are transitioning to, say, middle or high school. Anytime that we're embarking on a new school journey, I think some of these same worries crop up. So
absolutely,
that's today's topic. I also think, Megan, that whenever we do these, it's really just a great illustration of how many things I find to worry about and how great you are at not sweating the small stuff.
The thing is, I worried about a lot of school. Like, school was a big one for me.
So, okay. Yeah.
That was one of the things where my worry mom, or my overachiever mom or something side really came out when it came to school. So
the thinking.
Yeah. For a while, then I just threw my hands up and gave up.
Well, we all appreciate your, you have more hindsight than I do here. So, okay. I don't even have any. Oh, yes, I do. I have a big housekeeping thing.
We also
have
a
giveaway.
Yeah.
We have a really fun giveaway at the end of this episode. We're going to make you listen to the end, but I will give you a hint that this is a giveaway package of 5 awesome products, again, geared toward parents of kids who are starting preschool in that preschool, toddler and preschool age range. And the whole package is valued at over $200. So this is a great getting back to school or starting a new preschool package for moms of little ones. And I will talk about the products at the end of the show and tell you how to enter. So listen all the way to the end, all the way through our worries our getting over our worries. So let's get to it. All right, I'm going to throw a couple out there of things that I spent way too much time worrying about that I now realize in retrospect. And the first one happens even before the kids start school, and that is researching all the schools and visiting all the schools in my area. So you probably had a different experience, although I know you've moved, so maybe you did have some of this, but I lived in an area in the Phoenix metro area, Phoenix, Scottsdale, where there was a lot of school choice for both preschool and then when I had an entering kindergartner. And a lot of, I wouldn't say pressure, but a lot of assumption that the good parents were looking into all of the options, which, again, we've said it before on the show, choices and availability of information is great when you're a parent, but it is also can be completely overwhelming and get you like all in a tizzy. So I'm not saying I wish I wouldn't have done my research and done a few school tours, but I don't think it's necessary to provide yourself with all of the information when choosing the right school. I think there's a whole lot of leap of faith going on, and choosing your neighborhood school or the cheapest school or the one on the way to your job for convenience, there's a lot of value in that. So Yeah. I guess if you're in an area where that's a pressure situation, or like I said, an assumption that that's what you're supposed to do, just listen to that little voice that says, you know what, I'm just going to go with this one because that's where my sister-in-law's kids went, or whatever the reason is, your reason is valid, and you don't don't have to make a spreadsheet. I literally think I had a spreadsheet. So
my experience was a little bit different, just because when my kids first started going to school, we lived in a pretty small town.
Right.
But we were close to a bigger city that had a lot of options. So technically I did have access to options, lots of them, but I just kind of narrowed my search because I was, you know, pregnant with my third at the time, and it was just really stressful. And, so Jacob was my, you know, first kid in school, and has always been the one who liked school the least. And so he had a really rough time, and I put him in the public school, and we put him in the kindergarten there, and he just had a really rough time. So we pulled him out and homeschooled him in first grade. And then the next year I just was like paralyzed because we hadn't had a great experience at the public school.
Right.
I really didn't have enough experience as a mom yet to know if that was him or the school or just a bad fit. Like I couldn't really suss that part out. So we wound up putting the boys in a Catholic school, a little Catholic school, which was fantastic. Like it was a really comforting little transitional phase for me, I guess I would say, because it was small and it really felt like a family. And so that was like my whole reason was really like I felt more comfortable there and I felt like they liked me more or something. Like it was one of those like, you know, I have no valid reason. I can't tell you if the education is better here.
Right.
I just feel better here.
Right.
Then we moved to Chicago. And we lived in Chicago for 1 year, and I did the whole, like, tried to figure out the school choice thing. We got there a little late, so we really weren't able to get in on any of the public school choices, like, because that all has to happen ahead of time. And so the kids ended up in a little Lutheran school there because I toured, you know, maybe 5 or 6 schools, got completely overwhelmed, and picked one that had a sign out for an orientation, like a parent orientation, and happened to be like 4 blocks from our house. So I went to the parent orientation. It was one of those schools that was like kind of up, you know, like in an up and coming area, they really needed parent participation. So by the end of it, like the principal had already latched onto me as someone who was going to be that person, which is so funny because, you know, that I'm not, right? Yeah. And we had a nice year there. And then at the end of the year, we moved because I couldn't handle it. I just couldn't handle the Chicago school system. And with as many kids as we have.
Yep.
And as many really there, unless you're fortunate enough to have the budget to live near a fabulous neighborhood school, everybody does magnets or selective enrollment or something like that. And people end up driving their kids all over the city. And you have to like really, there's this whole lottery process. You have to get on it super early. And I just took a look at my life and my reality of a mom with 4 kids. And then I was pregnant with Clara. And I was like, nope, moving.
Yeah.
We're just going to move to a place where there's one school.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. So my kids are in the school system in a large part because I needed to simplify and I couldn't handle it.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good story. And again, evidence that our motivations for choosing a school, I don't think need to be, everyone's motivations are different and everyone's priorities are different. And I think that's a dangerous comparison if you get into comparing with other families, what other families are doing. And again, in hindsight, we can see where the priorities were pretty clear and you were able to kind of zone in on that at that point. I want to mention,
I'm not sure if it was so much of a zone in as like a giving up, but it worked out. My kids for the most part had a really great experience in these schools. I mean, we picked a town that we knew had good schools, but it was just that there was only one district. So I knew no matter where we lived in town, it was going to be that. And so I didn't even have to think about it.
I want to mention that we did a whole episode on choosing schools, episode 16, back about a year ago. So if this is a hot topic for you, we're going to move on to other things we freaked out about. But if this is a hot topic for you, we shared some of those same stories and then continued on that topic. Spoiler alert, the answer is don't worry about it. It'll all be okay. But that was episode 16 and I'll link to that in the show notes. All right, I'm going to move on. Here's another big one, I think, is potty training before preschool. Things that I have had experience freaking out about, and I know other moms do as well. Many preschool programs have a rule that your kid has to be potty trained for a certain classroom. I know we've been at preschools where there's like a toddler class, but to go into the, say, the 3-year-old or 3- and 4-year-old class, they need to be potty trained. I have Reed has a June birthday, which means he turned 3 in June and started preschool that August. So, and he potty trained at 3, like after he turned 3. So we were down to the wire. He was not my first kid to potty train, but he was a very different kid to potty train than my first and later, as is, you know, pretty average with boys, I think. But he also, it wasn't just that he was older. It was also that he didn't respond to the same incentives or logic, or it didn't have the same issues. Allegra had more accidents, I would say. He just did not want to put on underwear, like literally did not. He didn't even want to be naked after a bath. It was almost like a security thing. He wanted to have a diaper on. So it was a totally different, anyway, different potty training process. And it did come down to the wire. And I guess if we're talking about hindsight and not worrying so much, what I have found as I've moved through preschools is, number one, you always feel like you're the only one whose kid is borderline potty trained. And let me tell you, you are probably in the majority, because potty learning and training, there's so many different issues kids have. Some of them don't like to poop. Some of them don't like to go by themselves. Some of them can't get their pants up. Like, no 3-year-old is like 100%. I mean, I shouldn't say no, but it's very normal for 3-year-olds to not be all the way done with their toilet experience.
And many, many, many of them will still need something during nap time if nap time is part of their preschool experience. I mean, like, that's totally like not even borderline developmentally appropriate is for kids to have. They don't learn that at 3.
Such a good point. And just all the little things that go along with it, they're all on some kind of continuum. So number one, you are not alone. And it always feels like you're the only one who's trying to sneak in this barely potty trained kid for the first day of school. Number two, teachers are more understanding than you think. Now, no teacher wants you to pass off like a kid who's never heard of the toilet as a potty trained kid and just have them pee all over the floor. But teachers, a lot of teachers are moms. A lot of teachers have gone through it themselves. And they are so much more compassionate and understanding. They signed up to be a preschool teacher. If they didn't
they knew what they were getting into.
Pee on their bathroom floor from little dribbles here and there, they wouldn't have gone into this line of work. So those, I think, are two things that I now, in hindsight, really was very hard on myself. The good news about Reed, the happy ending to my story, is he was one of those kids that once he finally got it, he never had accidents, ever. I have another child who had accidents, random potty accidents, into way later years, not often, but whereas he never, ever, like, had a problem once he was fine. It just took a really long time, and it took different strategies than I thought it would. So, I don't know. That's another big one.
Yeah, that, and I also think there are kids who literally are potty trained while they're at preschool, and then they come home on the weekends and are like not potty trained anymore. And it's because at school there's that routine and the peer pressure and all that scheduling around it. And so that was something, I can't remember now which kid it was of mine, maybe Jacob, where his teachers were like, no, he's totally potty trained. And I was like, what are you talking about? No, he's not. But he was able to kind of hold it for the time he was there or just get on board for the 3 hours he was at school or whatever it was. I still don't even know. So you might have that experience as well. But I totally agree. You know, there's 3-year-olds are huge. There's a huge spectrum of behaviors and abilities there as far as potty learning goes. And most of the time, if you hear and sometimes there are schools I've heard of that are very strict about that. And if that's you've been in your experience, don't let that scare you that they're all like that, because they're not.
Agreed. And I would just be open, either with your teacher if you have a relationship with, or if it's your first time going into that class with the school, and just ask, like, what's like, how does this work? If we're having potty issues, what's your approach? Do you send the kid home? Do you, because nobody's gonna kick you out of school on the first day if your kid has an accident. So I guess just lifting some of the pressure on yourself to have it be perfect. And I'm so glad you brought that up, that some kids are actually better about their potty habits at school than they are at home. There's so much like psychology in it with mom. Sometimes it's better for someone else to just say, all right, it's time to go, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
So, okay. Feel free to interrupt me if you are having any memories of things you freaked out about. Otherwise, I'm going to
just keep going, because I'm sure I'll have something to say about everything on your list.
All right, so this one might be more uniquely me, but I know you're out there, other mamas who are like me. I thrive on information in advance because I do like to know what to expect. It's part of my personality. And I've had the experience with preschools in particular that aren't great at parent communication, because preschools often are a small business, a privately owned thing. They're run by educators and nurturers, and they're not set up like you know, a well-oiled machine some of the time. And it used to really frustrate me and add to kind of my being a new mom in school anxiety when I wasn't getting, you know, I wasn't getting the newsletters because they didn't have my email. I wasn't getting the memo. I'd show up and not realize it was, and I just would, I had a lot of resentment about like, why can't these schools get it together, you know, from a parent communication standpoint. And I've just learned that it may be frustrating and maybe they could do a better job, but it's not always the hallmark of a good school or a good teacher. Because I've had phenomenal teachers who aren't natural parent communicators, who don't have a newsletter every week, who forget to tell you about share day, and who are honestly some of the best preschool teachers my kids have ever had. So I don't know if this is like something I worried about, but definitely something that I judged and had like attached a lot of significance to, because in the beginning it just seemed like this is their job to keep parents informed. And if your school has like is terrible in this regard, certainly something should be done about it. But I think I attached more significance to it and sort of tied it to what I thought about the teacher and what I thought about the school. And I've since learned that that's not necessarily, you know, communication can always be improved, but it's not necessarily tied to how good a teacher or how good a preschool program it is.
That's so funny because I have been the complete opposite. I kind of loved the teachers who were forgetful and didn't send notes home, because in a way I felt like it let me off the hook a little bit. Yeah. I've had teachers, my kids have had teachers that are excellent communicators. And then I feel like if I drop the ball, it's all on me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people who are really naturally organized can be a little judgy about people who aren't.
Yes.
And what? Especially, yeah, I know, especially teachers who have like didn't have small kids of their own and stuff like that. I would sometimes feel like, do they even know what my life is like?
Right.
I'm getting, I got the newsletter. I guess it got buried in my email. I didn't see it, or it came home in the backpack and I didn't get it out in time, or ended up in the recycle. I'm terrible about recycling stuff, by the way, like prematurely recycling homework or notes that I, because I just kind of get in this like frenetic cleanup mode, because that's how I have, that's kind of how I have to operate to keep things running. So I always really appreciated the ones who knew that that was a weakness of theirs and were just kind of like, sorry, guys, because I would find that then you would kind of realize that like missing share day or not having, you know, the color of the day on or whatever the thing was in preschool wasn't really that big of a deal. And those teachers tend to not make as big of a deal about it because they know that they're probably not always letting you know. So I've had kind of – I like the ones in the middle who like – are pretty good, or at least they try, but they know they screw up sometimes and aren't sort of like, hey, why didn't your child wear, you know, a crazy hat today? It was crazy hat day.
Right.
So I don't know. It's all over the place for me, but it's funny that you would have a completely, well, it's not that unexpected that you'd be
it's not unexpected. And it was our first preschool in particular who did nothing by email. Like you could email them. I remember emailing a question to the email published on their website and like literally nobody got it for like 3 months. And I just was like, come on, people. And you know what made the breakthrough? And this is probably just a good lesson in general, was a few months into the school year, I just finally developing, this is also a school where there wasn't a lot of parent interaction with the teacher. They'd get the kid out of the car in the drop-off line, walk them in, and they'd put the kid in at the end of the day, and they, you know, you could chat for 30 seconds about how the day went. But until like the parent-teacher conference, I just didn't feel like I knew the teacher all that well. So I had nothing. The only thing they published was like, call this number if you have an issue. Well, I didn't have any issues big enough to call a number. I just felt like I wanted a little more back and forth. And it was my first kid. And finally, I think it was at one of the parent-teacher conferences, I said, is there a way to get a hold of you? You know, just if something comes up, if Allegra had a, you know, a rough night of sleep and I wanted to let you know or whatever. And she said, yeah, just text me. And she gave me her personal cell phone number, which not all teachers will do. Right. And I don't think they should. And it's not, but in this particular relationship, it ended up being perfect. I could just, you know, I could let her know if something was up at home or if I needed to pick her up early. And I like found my own way to communicate with that classroom. And I think because I had this rigid expectation of how it should work, that was like was an uncomfortable tension for a while. But I guess in retrospect, just knowing that all schools are different, all teachers are different, and most teachers want to have a way to be in communication with you. They just are different, just like people are different. Some people hate the phone. Some people like aren't good emailers, or they send emails, but they come out sounding all wrong. You know, I've had teachers like that too, where I'm like, oh Lordy, stay off the email. Like, you know, just because that's not the way they're trained to communicate. So I don't know. That was kind of, that took us in a lot of different directions, but.
Well, it's I think it's probably a pretty common thing. And I think you're right that probably with the first kid, it's the most intense with all that. Plus, you know, with your first kid, you want to talk about your kid a lot. That's another thing that I think I've gotten over. I remember feeling this intense need when it was Jacob to talk about him constantly. And for other people to remark upon how special he was.
or to have the teacher know them. Do you feel that way?
Yeah. Exactly. Like I wanted to feel like they were as, and not that I'm suggesting like a teacher isn't going to like your kid or know your kid, but they're not going to be as taken with your kid as you are. That would be weird. Right. They have 25 or 30 kids to know. And they're looking at a group, right. Like kind of like the way I look at my family now, right? Like where everyone's kind of there. Part of a unit. And in those days I was looking at Jacob as a very special snowflake. And I guess I just really wanted that acknowledged in some way. I think sometimes my interactions with teachers, I was really just fishing. Now looking back, it's so funny. I think I was just kind of fishing for like someone to tell me how cool my kid was, you know? Yeah. So I can kind of acknowledge that looking back all those years ago now, but.
Well, and it's funny. I can kind of relate. Although I think what I was more trying to do was make sure they knew like all my kids' little quirks, just so that almost to give them a head start on the relationship. Like, you know, when he has to go potty, he'll do this. Well, they are going to figure that out on their own. And actually it's a beautiful thing for your kid to have a relationship that they build on their own with somebody else. And now I totally realize that. But I think I was more trying to like, you know, you get a little questionnaire, like tell us about your child. I was cramming the margins of that thing and hoping that they were going to memorize it. Like, I just wanted them to know what I knew. I don't know why, to make it easier on my kid. And yes, so they could see what a special snowflake they were. But yeah, I think kind of the same thing is that realizing that they will get to know your kid. They do think your kid is great. And it's a great thing for your kid to impress that teacher in his or her own way and not.
Well,
in the
that's
way
the other thing in not, you don't, it doesn't have to all go through your filter. Sometimes we know our kids a certain way, but they can be different with us than they are with other people. And we can be kind of myopic in the way that we see them. So totally.
Okay. Well, I'm going to jump to something that's a little more elementary school age. And this came from a Facebook comment from our listener, Carol. And she is looking back, realizing that she totally stressed over having enough school supplies, getting everything on the list and having it all ready, you know, like the paper says in time for school. And you and I actually, we also have done, we've touched on this in a previous episode, but it's worth mentioning again that the school supply lists are a guideline. No one is going to fire you from the PTA if your glue sticks are not the right brand. And not only does it not all have to be there on the first day, it's almost a little overwhelming when it is all there the first day.
I agree.
If you're the parent that like waits till the kids are in school and then hits up Target when you have a free moment and, you know, grabs what's it's just all going to be okay.
You know, the other thing to keep in mind, especially for young kids, is often now and increasingly so I've noticed, for like preschool, kindergarten, first, second, sometimes up to like fourth grade, a lot of those supplies are shared. So yours doesn't even have to be in the teacher's hands until like mid-year. I mean, really.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's good to know. You don't want to show up in January with your kid's first pack of crayons and the whole time the teacher's been like, okay, what was this all about? But oftentimes those are a group thing. That's like your contribution to the classroom. They don't necessarily need to be there on day one.
Right. Yes. Agreed. And all the, I know they get so specific about what brands they want. And I think part of that comes from, you know, quality supplies are important and it doesn't do anybody, nobody wins if, you know, there's an off-brand kind of glue stick that never works. But I think the other side is it can feel so prescriptive and so like if you like me and you follow rules to the letter, it's like, oh my gosh, I have to look for the Fiskar scissors with the rounded tips, you know. I don't know.
Or if you're like wondering, if you've gone to four different stores and you cannot for the life of you find a red, yellow, blue, and green folder that has two pockets and three rings. I mean, sometimes those are very specific and there's been times where I'm like, okay. But then I just give myself a little bit of a break and order them on Amazon, and if they don't come for a week, they don't come for a week. It's not, you know, it's not the end of the world. And
the
they
other
won't use
thing
that
I've,
stuff right away.
Right. And the other thing I found, which kind of goes back to teacher communications, is a lot of times lists might be put together by the whole team or the school at large or the district even. The teachers will, if it's really important to them, like say it's a certain type of, a certain brand of something or something they really need right the first day, the teachers will find a way to let you know. You know, you'll get you'll get an email just from the teacher saying, you know, the three ring binder is really important because we're going to be using it on the first day. So they, if something is mission critical, the teachers will let you know. Whereas often the supply lists are sort of a team effort. And if, you know, of course, it's great to make your contribution, but doesn't need to be something you totally stress over.
This is where I'm going to put in a plug for my strategy, my lazy mom strategy that I've accidentally fallen into the last 2 years of not actually cleaning out backpacks to like the day before the new school year, because I find so much stuff I can reuse in those. And if I took the time to sort it all out and put it all away, then I just have to get it all back out 3 months later. So, you know, like last year when I did that on accident, I just, we had a family party. I put all the backpacks out in the front, you know, entryway, which we never use really.
Right.
And then forgot about them until August. But when I went in and started pulling the stuff out, I realized I could just kind of shuffle things around. Like there were pencils that hadn't been used. There were crayons that were barely touched. There were folders that Owen had been assigned that he never used that I could then just put in Clara's bag. So there was, you know, not that everyone's not going to use that strategy, but I think, you know, if you want to be a little disorganized and just throw everything in a big pile from last, everything that's salvageable in a big pile, you can probably shop out of that pile.
Yeah. And then keep it away. If your kids are like, my kid's age is two, where they're doing a lot, they're still doing a lot of art and random stuff this summer.
Yep.
Not a bad idea to keep it separate so that it doesn't get absorbed into, then it's not as in as good a shape after a summer of.
I know that because Clara went through all the kids' brand new, like the big boys had tons of notebooks. They didn't use them all. And she went through and like drew little stories, but only on the first page.
Yeah. Nice.
Of, you know, like four different, of course you could just tear the first page out. It's not a big deal. It's still usable, but.
Totally. Like, or my kids have been using scissors for all kinds of like non-sanction related scissor activities. So all the scissors
all sticky
are
sticky
like, now. Sticky with glue and like rusty. And I don't know what happened. So yeah, I love that. Okay, so what about making friends with other parents and or getting involved socially? I'm not talking about volunteering just yet. I think we should touch on that. But I'm talking about like mom cliques or being friends or friendly with other parents at school. Again, my very first preschool experience was at a school where we did the drop-off line with our cars. So there was very little socializing and there wasn't a lot of parent like events or anything to get involved in. So I just felt like I didn't know anybody. And I would say it was more of like a discomfort at feeling like I didn't know any other parents. Not that I super wanted to be best friends with everyone, but I know that schools can have cliques. It can feel overwhelming if like, let's say parents have had younger siblings at that school. So they've been around a long time, even if their child's entering kindergarten or preschool, they, you know, they know the teachers and they know everybody, and it can be intimidating to go into that. Have you experienced that in any way?
So here is one thing where I will again put out a, you know, piece of advice to know yourself and be okay with your own personality when it comes to this. I think I put a lot of pressure on myself in the early years, and almost was judgy of myself that I wasn't more of like a mingler.
Mm-hmm.
Like a drop-off line mingler, a playground mingler. I am terrible at that. And I'm an extrovert. So it's not, again, we've talked about this before. It's not that like I don't like to talk to people. It's not that I'm not friendly and outgoing. I really am. But that, like, I get hives when I am, when I walk up to a crowded state, bleachers, you know what I mean? Or like the playground or whatever. And I have to go sit next to some random mom and start a conversation. It is terrible. I hate it. Hate it. Hate it. Hate it. So I really... this time around, you know, I kind of figured out that I hated it after trying with, I think, three different, by the time we ended up in this school district, I think it was like three different schools. And I just kind of let myself be the mom on the sidelines for a while. I realized that it was easier for me to make friends in really specific situations like, hey, you know, William's best friend's mom seems pretty cool. And then by becoming friends with her, like that kind of introduced me to a social circle outside of my own that I wouldn't otherwise maybe have even infiltrated. So I've done a lot of that kind of thing, which has taken some, it takes longer that way, honestly, you know, and you don't always, it's not like not everyone your kid is buddies with, you're not always going to love that person's mom. You're just not going to hit it off, or they're going to be busy during the times you're not, or whatever. That really worked for me. And part of that though, was also that when we started here was probably one of the busiest times of my life as a mom. I was, you know, pregnant with my fifth kid. So I just didn't even really have the luxury.
Yeah.
I just really, I like scaled things down. I hung out with like one or two people that I already knew and I kept it really, really simple for a while. And now it's kind of crazy how many people I know now. It's kind of now, it's like the Pandora's box that I think I just kind of purposely kept shut for a long time. Yeah. And once I kind of opened it up and like got to know some people, it spread.
Right.
Part of it's because it's a small town, but it spread really fast. And I'm like, ugh, I know too many people. No, put it back in. But I don't know. That's kind of long-winded. And I don't know if that actually answers your question.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's just like, it happens. Like it'll happen. It doesn't have to happen today or tomorrow. And you're not a loser if you're not friends with the other moms in the clique. And you know, the clique baby will change next year.
I think, and knowing yourself, I think is the smartest advice. I know, like, so I have a slightly different, like, social anxiety or social issue than you do. I don't mind making small talk with somebody I don't really know, but where I get really intimidated is when I feel like, and a lot of times it's my own perception, not reality. If I feel like everybody knows each other and I don't know, and I am on the outside, that's where mine super kicks in. And for some reason I've been at schools that, where that seems to be the case. I don't know if it's just starting a new school. And then, you know, when your kid is the youngest, other parents may have been there longer. And then we moved. So then I was in a, you know, but I guess my just what I found, number one, knowing yourself, knowing that that's a trigger for me. And it's not necessarily true that everybody knows each other and is best friends. And I'm the only one who knows no one. That's definitely a concern.
They might all just be making small talk.
Exactly.
You know, you don't have, you have no idea.
Or they might have met last week and they're just talking to each other because they're a familiar face. But again, I think developing one-on-one relationships, not even deep friendships, but just like if you know that one person's name and you can say hi to them, just starts to sort of break up that feeling like it's you're the odd man out.
And but, I think also like connecting with social connectors, some people are really good at that. And some people are the people who know everyone and bring people together. And it's not usually hard to find those people because they kind of, they want you. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, ooh, fresh blood. How do I get my hands on you? Sometimes just that, having that connection, even if it's a very like casual connection, can it can kind of widen your circle. If you're ready for it to be widened, and maybe you're not, and that's okay too.
And I would say that if you are the more seasoned, I mean, I'm definitely in a position now where I'm a more seasoned school mom. Violet starts preschool in the fall at the place where Reed has been the last couple of years. So I know the front desk ladies and I know the teachers, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to feel like I wasn't just a total stranger. So if you are that person, you know, remember that some mom is walking in there for the first time. And not only is their kid new to school, but they are new to being a school mom, which is like, it's like starting high school. Being a school mom is like a whole different phase, you know, and it is a little socially intimidating. So, you know,
absolutely.
Throw somebody a bone. Just be nice to them.
Be nice. Really go out of your way.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? I feel like I should say one more thing about that.
Because
I think the social thing is a big one.
Yeah.
One thing that has helped me if I am having a lot of like weird social anxiety in a situation like that is to get myself in some kind of position of being in charge or like doing something.
That helps me a lot too.
And I don't mean necessarily the person who shows up as I'll tell you one thing that doesn't help. When I show up and I'm like one of 20 volunteers, but I don't have a specific job.
Oh, the worst.
And then I kind of have to get there and like wait around.
The worst.
And put myself really forward.
Yeah.
To the boss lady or whoever, you know, whoever is in charge. Right. That for me is like even worse than
you
just
and I
not
are not good on committee. Can we agree that committees are not
the
place?
Yes, committees are the worst.
You and I may be different in certain ways, but both of us are about as committee phobic as.
Yeah. I would rather someone just handed me a pair of scissors and a stack of paper and said, cut this.
Yes.
I'd be like, thank you. Yeah, I'll cut this all day. That sounds great.
Yeah, me too.
So it's just, it's again, knowing yourself and being okay with whatever kind of mom you are, whether it's, you know, volunteering or just standing in line or whatever at the bleachers. It's also okay to be the one who sits by yourself. I want to know that too.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes that's me.
Let's talk more about, let's actually go deeper with that because volunteering was something else I wanted to address. And it's a lot of the same themes about knowing yourself and knowing what kind of volunteering, and then also the pressure of feeling how you feel when you don't or can't volunteer.
Right.
Because again, this is a big one. It's also something we've talked about before. So I will link to our other school related episodes, but I think again, going to the theme of what we shouldn't have fretted so much about, one thing I just don't think I was knowledgeable about was how many different ways there are to contribute in a classroom. And I just had the very classic, like you show up and read it with a reading group, right, or you volunteer at a class party. I mean, I think those were like, or field trip. Those were probably the three things from my own elementary school memories and from like my narrow understanding of ways I figured it, I could contribute it. You know, PTA committees, field trip chaperone, party volunteer, and reader. And none of those really are my jam, to be honest. Some are okay more than others. I'm like you. I like being in the classroom if I have a really specific job, especially if it's a skill I can lend that I feel confident in. I've had teachers ask me to take pictures before, which I love because I'm a pretty good photographer and I'm a decent photographer. I'm really good at the post photography stuff, like downloading the pictures, editing them, printing them for the teacher, whatever they need. So I think knowing yourself and knowing your skills and knowing how many different ways there are to contribute those skills, it goes back to having a good relationship with the teacher and knowing that it's not just what's on the sign up form, that there's more to it. My proudest moment as a classroom volunteer was last year, Allegra's second grade teacher, by about 2/3 of the way through the school year, she'd send Allegra home with no note, no email to me, with a giant bag of unsharpened pencils. And I would send them back the next day sharpened, and we never communicated about it.
That's hilarious.
She just knew that I would do it, that, you know, I have a good electric pencil sharpener, and I felt like I was contributing in the best way. Cause if you've been in a first
nobody
or second
wants grade to do that
classroom, the pencils are a disaster.
Yes,
you know?
They are.
And so that was like a perfect example of like, oh, I found, she gets me. She knows I have a toddler that I have trouble getting a sitter for. She knows I'm not going to do a field trip. So just trust that there's a place for you in volunteering. And if you're not, and if you are into committees, then by all means go for it. But if you're not, there's a place for you and a way to help.
Absolutely. And can I share, you know, a shocking confession here? I probably already told you this, Sarah. I am like the most awkward person around little kids I don't know. Like the most awkward. If they're like, you know, the kid of a good friend and I already feel like I kind of know them. Like, you know, the first time I met Allegra, I didn't feel awkward around her because I knew her through you. Or if they're playing with my kid or something like that, that's a little bit different. But when it's, if I'm in a classroom and I'm supposed to be, you know, chaperoning or volunteering, I feel like I'm just like, it's so weird. I love children, you know, in general. But like the idea of like being surrounded by all these like sticky first graders, I just, and I kind of really beat up on myself about that when I was a younger mom, where I was like, what's wrong with me? Like I should love all the children. I should be like this earth mother type. And then I'll never forget my sister, Catherine, who, you know, is like my role model of all things don't care. And she said to me one time when I think maybe her third daughter was like going to third grade, she's like, that's it. I'm never chaperoning another field trip again. I've decided, because she did a whole bunch. And she's like, if one more random kid comes up to me and holds my hand or calls me mommy or touches me, I'm going to freak out. And she's like, it's just not a good, she's like, it makes my skin crawl. I don't know what it is, but it's just these like random small people coming up and like getting in my space. It made her very uncomfortable. And then I thought about it and I was like, I kind of feel the same way. Maybe not to that extent.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you're like not a good mom or a bad person. Right. You hate children. It's just like, you know, I don't know. It's just a little, it's just your personality type, and it's okay to feel, there's a reason I'm not a school teacher, especially of small, like elementary school age children. So that's another, I guess, nod to like, if you want to be the pencil sharpener person or the cutter outer of paper or help, you know, format the newsletter or whatever it is.
There's a place for you. And also, I think I worried or like thought more about what the teacher would think of me. I mean, I stay at home primarily with my kids, and I think there's like a little bit of a worry that, or an assumption that I've got the time because I'm not working full time. And and I've definitely felt that. But I've also had a toddler at home with me and working a little bit part time. So I've had so many times where I try to explain to a teacher, not that they've even asked, but why I can't come to something, and feeling that like spotlight on me, like what are they going to think, or how do I compare to the mom who really doesn't have time for this? And I think we can all give ourselves a break there. Your reasons are your reasons, and your reasons will change. I'm actually really looking forward to being a little bit more involved in the big kids elementary school. Because Violet will be in preschool 3 days a week. And I can say that I honestly want to, and that I want to find some ways where I can contribute in a way that's fun for me, and not that I'm not doing it because I feel the pressure. So if you're feeling the pressure and you're feeling like it's because you want the teacher to think you're a good mom or the other parents, you know, just go easy on yourself, I guess.
I have never made a good parenting decision because I wanted someone else to think I was a good mom. There has never been a time where I've been like, I really need to do this so other people think I'm a good parent, and then had that be the right choice. You know what I mean? Like,
so true.
Yeah.
So true.
That, if that's the motivation, then it usually is going to backfire in some way. Yeah. I just hope people aren't at home right now listening to this going, okay, I'm never letting Megan around my children because
You mentioned that once before a long time ago, and we actually got emails like being like, so glad that Megan brought that up because I don't really like other people's kids either.
Yeah. Individually, they're lovely. As a group, yes. I just have a hard time.
Right. So. And I think it's also when you're in a situation where you're kind of supposed to be mothering or chaperoning a bunch of kids.
And you're supposed to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I don't really know I don't know how to manage large groups of small kids. That's not my forte, right? I have like one at a time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I have another good one that I think applies no matter what age or phase of school your kid is in. And that is something I've worried about or thought a lot about in the summertime is how is my kid going to adjust to fill in the blank. I mean, we have transitions like half day to full day or going from elementary to middle school. I haven't done that yet. But, you know, every couple of years, there's more homework or testing this year. Every couple of years, there's a pretty significant change in what is expected of them. You and I have talked about how we feel about increasingly rigid academic expectations. But whatever it is, my kids have always adjusted better than I thought, quite honestly. You know, I've worried before, like, how are they going to go without a rest or a nap in the afternoon if they're going to full day? Or, you know, it's such a big class compared to what they're used to. How are they even going to, like, know how to ask the teacher something in a crowd this big? And, you know, again, things I shouldn't have freaked out so much about. They almost always adjust better than I thought they would, even to big changes.
They do. Well, and here's the thing, too, and isn't – this is going to sound so trite. But I think you can apply this to almost anything, whether it's making friends or kids adjusting or whatever. They either will or they won't.
Right.
But really worrying about it does nothing ahead of time.
You're so smart.
Like borrowing trouble, it's like it doesn't help at all because they will or they won't. And pretty soon you'll know if they are or they aren't. And then you can deal with it. But like really worrying about it ahead of time, it just seems like that's one of those things you have absolutely like no control over. You can prepare them.
Right.
And if they have a special need or like anxiety or whatever, you can talk to their teacher. I think that's it's good to be proactive. But worrying without action to me just feels like there's just really no point.
No, it's just a habit. It's just a nasty habit.
What is that? Isn't there a biblical sufficient thereof? What does that say? You know, the troubles of the day.
You're asking
like,
the wrong
don't
lady.
Worry about. I know it's one of those ones that gets thrown around a lot. Someone's gonna know this and be like, "Come on, Megan, get yourself together." It's like it basically means like there's enough trouble today. You don't need to worry about tomorrow because sufficient to the day are the troubles thereof. I think is what it is. But anyway, we'll get that right and put it in the show notes.
Even if you don't spend a lot of time worrying or stressing, I've been pleasantly surprised at how. Most kids take things in stride, even when it's a fairly big change. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and there's a whole classroom of kids who have to get this, right?
Yes.
You know, no one's kid is like someone's kid, I'm sure, is like some super special, perfect adjuster kid who just goes with the flow all the time. But most kids run into bumps. And teachers know that, and the people making – administrators know that, and people making these policy changes and all that know that too. Yeah. So they've got safeguards in place to help kids through these transitions anyway, and they know they're not all going to do it. Right?
And they don't expect it right away. I think that's a really good point, especially when we see the trend to holding back kindergartners. And I don't fall on any extreme line with regard to redshirting your kindergartner. I know it's a huge benefit to some kids. And it's fine, but I think when everybody is all of a sudden worried or contemplating whether to start a 5.5-year-old in kindergarten, then either kindergarten has gotten too advanced, as we've kind of touched on this show, or we're just succumbing to a pressure to have our kids be ready for something that isn't necessarily about being ready. It's about being there and getting ready while you're there. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
it's for me because Reed is a young – He wouldn't have even been young with a June birthday, but now, at least where we are, June makes you very young, especially if you're a boy. That almost everybody with a summer birthday is now kind of held back, even though our deadline is September 1st. So I don't know how I got on that tangent, except that
understanding
that everybody's adjusting and that the adjustment is part of it, that it's not your job to get a kid ready for a full day academic day. That's the school's job once they're there, I guess. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Totally. And if everybody succumbs to that same pressure, then the meaning of kindergarten changes, right?
Exactly.
I mean, then everybody's older. And then, you know, it's like, it's just that shift. And it's, I guess you resist it as you can, or if it's important to you too, but it's just that overall feeling like if everyone expects this of their kids, then the meaning of what it is to do this materially has changed.
Agreed.
It's then the expectation, the bar is raised for everybody.
And that trickles down to how we think about preschool. I know I definitely made some like second year preschool, like that pre-K year, some decisions on the schedule that I was going to have my kids go based on what I thought would get them ready for kindergarten. And in retrospect, again, they are getting ready for kindergarten from the time they're born. It's just called like growing up and developing and maturing.
Right.
So, again, making or stressing over decisions with the aim of getting them ready for some new phase, I think, again, is a slippery slope. I just re-said what you said.
And can be kind of counterproductive.
I want to tell people about our giveaway soon, but have I missed anything that
I this is one of those things we could just sit here and talk about all day.
Yes.
Can we just like sum it up the way we always do?
Yes.
Which is, it'll all be all right. I don't know. And like I said, you know, sometimes it won't. Sometimes you're going to have like a really stressful year and your kid's not going to like the teacher and you're going to meet some mean moms and you're not going to like, you know, you're going to miss the memo and one day I'll tell the story about the time I missed the Thanksgiving dinner. I think I told you that one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
My kids all cried at school. Because it was a new school and I didn't understand that the culture was all the parents go to the Thanksgiving dinner. The school we'd been at before, parents didn't go. And so I just flaked and then ran into another mom from the school later. And she's like, I called you earlier. Is everything okay? And like was trying to, you know, kind of beat around the bush. I had no idea. And it turned out my kids had stood there and cried. I mean, I felt like the biggest, like the most terrible mom. So sometimes that crap is going to happen to you. But worrying about it right now, freaking out about it now is not, it's not going to make it not happen. That's for sure.
That's right. And I think whatever you are, I mean, I think what these episodes always do for me, because I do like to think about things and worry about them in advance, is that whatever I'm like obsessed over right now, that in 3 years, I'm going to be like, why were you so worried about that? It's a great exercise.
And I did ask my boys recently if they remembered that Thanksgiving dinner and neither one of them did. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really
awesome. They're not scarred for life.
Well, I would love to hear from listeners, either a comment on the show notes, which will be at themomhour.com. If you have something on your mind that you're unsure of how it's going to go, or that you're spending a lot of time thinking about, leave us a comment on the show notes and we will make you feel better. We'll just tell you not to worry about it. But I bet other parents will chime in too, because a lot of this is universal. So you can leave that comment at themomhour.com. Look for episode 62. Leave us a comment. If you prefer, you can email us hello@themomhour.com and let us know what you're freaking out about this starting school year. And now I'm going to tell you about our giveaway. We have 5 awesome products that are geared toward, I would say, toddlers and preschoolers. If you win this giveaway, you get all 5. 2 of them are personalized for your kid. So I'm just going to touch on them real quick. But the easiest way when we're talking about great products for parents is to go to our website and look at the pictures and check out the products. So don't stress if this doesn't make sense to you the way I'm describing it. But the first product is one I've used personally, and they're called Orbitz Labels by Inchbug. And basically what they do is they fit around a bottle or a sippy cup, and they're kind of a soft silicone. Like, remember those Lance Armstrong, Live Strong, like those kind of bracelets? Same kind of material. It's firm but has a little stretch, and it fits around your bottle or your sippy cup or your water bottle, any size, kind of snug like a little bracelet. But you can leave it on forever and just goes right in the dishwasher, so it's not a sticker.
Cool.
Like a silicone bracelet, like a little
baby
ring.
Koozie.
Yes. Yeah. And they're thin. enough. And you can also have little icons. If your child has an allergy, you can put a little peanut on there. They can get fancy, but they're, I just loved that once they were on, I never had to worry about them ever again. And they fit multiple sizes. I should put a picture because Reed has a water bottle he's had literally since he was one that has had it on there the entire time for like 5 years. And they're really simple and they're, so that's one of them. So it would be personalized with your child's name. I think they come in packages of four, so you can have, put them on a few water bottles. So this next one is $120 value and it is a personalized nap mat. So like if your kid takes a nap at preschool and they're so beautiful, they're handmade or made with, you know, custom fabrics and there's a bunch of different styles to choose from and then your child's name can be on it. So it rolls up kind of like a mini sleeping bag, but it's just a cozy mat. So you could have it at preschool, you could keep it at the sitter's house or, you know, just anywhere where you need to nap on the go. Very cute. It's by janiebee.com is the company. Again, all this I'll link to. So the third product is a peanut butter substitute called Wow Butter that I am personally kind of excited about because
I need this.
Yes. And I'll talk about it in a future episode, but my older two kids are actually starting a brand new school this fall, which I feel like we have not talked about, but that's for another time. So our new school is completely peanut and nut free, which our old schools were not. But I was very curious to try this Wow Butter. It's wowbutter.com and it's non-GMO, gluten-free. It's made in a dairy and nut-free facility. It is soy-based, so if you had a soy issue, this would not be the one for you. But the texture and the taste is really pretty close to peanut butter. So I know we've also tried sunflower seed butter, which has kind of just a different taste. I like it. It's okay. This, I would say, is a closer representation of peanut butter if you've got just a kid who loves peanut butter. Yeah. And so these are $28 for six jars. And I believe the giveaway winner will get a sample of that size. So you can try it out, you know, share with your friends. So if you have a nut-free school, definitely worth a try. And then two more. So this next one is for you winter climate people, because I know nothing about losing mittens, except I imagine.
I know everything about losing mittens.
Except I imagine it's annoying.
So we have a whole bag full of one mitten that without the other mitten.
I don't know how
it always happens that they lose one from the pair, you know?
You need to write some kind of like an essay about that, I feel. Yes. The island of misfit mittens.
I just make them wear, you know, mismatching mittens, but this sounds like a better solution.
Yes, so this is actually a combo of a fleece jacket with snap-on mittens. So it's actually, you would get there's different styles for boys and girls, and it's a fleece. There's a couple different styles, but basically a fleece jacket with mittens that snap on, and the styles are really cute. And then the mittens snap right onto the ends of the sleeves so that you don't lose them. And they look like great mittens and adorable styles. That's a $60 value. Again, you'd choose your boy or girl and your size, but geared toward that preschool set. And then the last one is called the Bump It Bowl. And I actually did try this one out too because I wanted to be able to talk about it. And it is one of those bowls that does not tip over or slide across the counter, and it really does work pretty great. It also has a cute little divider, so if your kid likes, you know, carrots and hummus or something where they can dip, you can put both sides in there and it will not knock over no matter what you do. It will stick to the counter. Nice. So
this is a heck of a giveaway,
right? I mean, yes. I am excited for someone to win all of this. So again, it's over $230 value. And all we are asking that you do to enter is leave us a comment on the show notes. I would love for people to sign up for our email list. But if you're already signed up or if you truly just – it's not can't, your thing, it's going to yeah. be – you can't bring can't yourself do to do it. I'm not going to – it's honor system. So yeah. I would love –
maybe you could do something else nice for us if you don't want to sign up to the email.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, follow come over us. And say hey to us on Facebook or something. I don't know.
Or
something
leave an fun. iTunes review. You guys know we talk about all the time. All of these things help us. So,
right.
You know, throw us a bone. But I would encourage you to sign up for our email list if you haven't already. That is right on our webpage at themomhour.com. It's right where you'll see all of this. So it's easy to do right there. But then do leave us a comment on the show notes because that will be your official entry. And when you leave a comment, leave a valid email address. It won't be published for others to see, but it will be the way that we contact you. I'm going to run this through August 10th, which will give us time to remind people in next week's show to give kind of a last chance. So Wednesday, August 10th at midnight will be kind of the cutoff, and then we will get all this out to you maybe in time for your new school year if you're not one of the crazy early starters. But
yeah, if you had to ask me what I'm freaking out about school, it's the fact that school's going to start. But
like at all.
At all.
You guys have a while. You have a while.
We have now. A long time. I have more than a month left. So
yeah, I have 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today. So
not enough.
I know. I know. So again, thanks for sitting through the long explanation, but we'll have photos of these products at themomhour.com. You can look through
them.
It'll
all be worth it for one of you. So
it's a pretty good package. So that's all I got. But
that's all I got too.
This is it for this week. Everybody head over to the website. We've done some great interview episodes recently. Our download numbers are growing. More and more people are subscribing and emailing us. So we're just really grateful. And continue.
Keep sharing, because I think that must be where it's coming from. So.
It is. And we just
keep sharing with your mom friends. We love hearing when people do that.
Yes. And we love hearing from you. So we will talk to everybody next week for episode 63.
See you then. Bye.